Now on Documentary on News Talk, producer Jonathan Farrelly brings us the story of how a member of the 2002 Armagh GAA coaching staff persuaded a sporting icon to inspire the team to glory in the All Ireland final.
I am the greatest! By Cassius Clay! This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary.
Muhammad Ali, 21st of September 2002. Dear Armagh player, it is with great pleasure that I write to each one of you today, wishing you the best of luck at the All-Ireland Football Championship final. You have already made history and should be very proud of yourself. I understand how much this match means to you, and I'm honoured if I have provided some inspiration to you along the way. You are also an inspiration to the thousands of people who will be watching you and who have followed the Armagh team all season. As one who also has heritage from Ireland, my great-grandfather Abe O'Grady was an Irish immigrant. I know that the luck of the Irish is not just a saying. Best wishes to you on a successful match, your co-countryman, Muhammad Ali. The reference to Abe O'Grady is really remarkable because when Muhammad Ali converted to Islam in the 60s, some of the many people who were critical of him in America at that time had looked at his genealogy and they were pointing out to him that he had white blood in him, and Ali denied it. You can see the politics of all of that at the time. But his critics, actually there was something accurate in what they were saying, that Muhammad Ali's great-grandfather was an Irishman. So it was amazing to get this letter, you know, 40 years on from all of that debate that was going on in America about Ali and his identity and Ali, the way Ali was handling at the time, to hear that being acknowledged. It was very powerful, I think. It's amazing, because at the time when Ali was, they were saying, oh, you've got white blood in you, and they were doing it, they were trying to be derogatory and stripping back, put him under pressure, and Ali was going, no. He was denying it. Actually, it was true. So, you know, a more mellow, thoughtful, politically savvy, maybe more secure, Ali was later able to say, yeah.
This is one thing I love and I admire about the Irish people. I studied a little of history since I've been here. I found out you've been underdogs for years, hundreds of years, people dominating you and ruling you, and you can identify with this freedom struggle, you understand? But I just have mine on the other side of the water. But we all are fighting for the same cause and idea, but we have different reasons and different approaches.
So my day job from the early 90s has been teaching at Ulster University, and I went in to teach on the degree in youth work, and parallel to that I was very interested in outdoor education and adventure learning techniques for helping develop individuals and groups and teams. And I, along with a really good friend of mine, a guy called Mark Rogers, who had worked with me in a charity for a few years together, a charity called Extern. We ended up building this high level ropes course, and we built it in the forest in near Pomeroy in County Tyrone. So that's a series of outdoor challenges that are, some of which are 30, 40 feet above the ground, high up, and you undertake them as an individual or as part of a team effort. And it gives you a chance to do something that appears very risky and appears very difficult, to do it in an environment where actually there's a lot of safety. And undertaking that, you can get very quickly into conversations about how you manage risk and challenge in life in general, and how you manage stress and anxiety and the inner voice that says that you can't take something on. So by doing the activities, you've got this accelerated way of getting into issues which I think are actually fundamental to you know, how people do in everyday life or in their working environment. So Mark and I built this course, and we started to work with a whole network of groups, from youth groups to leadership groups in the health service to corporate managers. And we found that the activities became a great vehicle for getting us into conversations about just human performance and how do individuals and teams thrive. Somehow or other, in 1998, I got a phone call from a guy called Mickey Hart, and he said that he was the manager of the Tyrone minor football team and had heard something about the ropes course and asked if I would do a workshop with his team at the ropes course. So they came along to the forest one day, and we spent the day together, and I really enjoyed it. I was very, very impressed by Mickey Hart, who I'd never met before. I felt that he had this ability to look at the activities we were doing and then articulate how it related to football performance. I thought he spoke brilliantly on the day, and we had a lot of laughs as a group, as you hope to have in those days too. And they had been managing some very difficult issues within their own squad. They had lost a player the previous year in a minor game. A guy called Paul McGurr died under tragic circumstances during a game. And there was something in that group that was made the agenda something just beyond football. Quite hard to put your finger on it, but they were very conscious of, I would say, a sense of obligation and responsibility to Paul McGurr's memory. It's an interesting thing to have that feeling about a group as young as that. And their captain was a guy called Cormac McAnally, who later, you know, went on to achieve serious things as a senior player before, again, his tragic early death. So I did that in 98, and 2 years later, the guts of that squad reached the final of the All-Ireland under-20 level, and Mickey Hart came back and asked me to kind of repeat the experience, which we did, and they won the All-Ireland that year as well. So that was a very small association with it, but one of the things I remember doing, I think I might have done it in 98 as well as 2000, was I had this length of 2 or 3 millimeter thick rope that was like a small version of the climbing ropes we used at the ropes course. And I got the players at the end of the day to stand in a circle holding the rope while I went around with scissors and cut off lengths of it, which I then made into bracelets, which they wore. And I know there became a craze for people bracelet wearing teams, and I wonder where we was that one of the first groups to do it. But it was that was really to create a memento of the day and a reminder of the fun that had together, and maybe some of the issues that they had raised as a group that they felt mattered to how they needed to be with each other and play with each other. So those little bracelets were as rudimentary as cut up pieces of 2 or 3 millimeter, you know, climbing cord.
Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
So in 2001, an Armagh player called Enda McNulty phoned me out of the blue. He had heard about the Tyrone work somewhere in the grapevine, and asked me if it was possible to do something with his senior team in Armagh. And he explained that they had some close calls getting to the last four of the All-Ireland Championship, hadn't quite made it. And he felt that some sort of team development work might give them some sort of advantage. So I met their manager at the time to discuss the possibility, and nothing happened. Enda was interested in the idea, the manager wasn't, and nothing happened. And I thought no more about it. And about a year later, Enda phoned me again, said, we have a different manager. Still think this would be good for us. We've had another, I think in 2001, did another year of maybe losing a semi-final, losing it maybe an extra time or in a replay. I need to look at the record books to remember exactly, but you just already know this story of a team that was nearly good enough, but not quite, was developing. Team that were, you know, losing the big games in the last moments. And I had the same reply. I said, you know, it's really about your manager and whether or not he's interested. And the manager then caught me up. I had never heard of him before. And that was a man called Joe Kernan. And on the back of the phone call, he just said, we're going to do this. We'll do this day with you at the ropes course. So they turned up in, I think it was early April of 2002. I think the National Football League was just over and they were then getting into their preparations for the All-Ireland Series. I did a day at the ropes course. It was probably very close in structure to the sort of stuff we'd done with Tyrone. And they had a very enjoyable day. And as the day was ending, Joe came to me and he had one foot on the platform of the bus to leave. And he said, would you come and work with us for the season? And I said I would. And the bus left. And then I wondered, what the heck do I do with a group of guys in a sport that I have no background in? I don't know anything about it. I played for my school McCrory Cup team. And the fact that I was playing gives you an idea about how poor the team was. I do think there was a McCrory Cup game where I was a substitute that got substituted. I'm pretty sure that did happen. I had no background in this sport. And I didn't know really anything other than what I was learning when I met the players about their history of near misses and, you know, the hard luck stories of the previous couple of years. So one of those things, it's like a bit like that opportunity arise in front of you and you either go, okay, I'll give this a go, or you maybe play it safe and say no. And I said, okay, I'll come and work with you. I had no idea. The ropes course was my thing. Outside of that environment, I didn't know what I was going to do with the team. So I think one of the really special things about the way Joe Kernan managed was his willingness to innovate, and he took the team away a lot. My memory was there was a lot of weekends of training camps where you could have this kind of intensity around both what they did in training and in, you know, working to build a sense of the community in the team away from training. And you going away for a weekend takes you away from all distractions. So Joe invited me then to the next training camp, which was a few weeks later. And I was thinking, well, he said, well, what I'd like you to do is do a presentation to the team on the Saturday night. And again, I suppose what was very generous about that, but very challenging, was he didn't tell me what to do the presentation about. He said, just come and do something you think is relevant. And I had been, around that time, I was reading this book, I have a copy here, The Fight by Norman Mailer, which is essentially the story of Muhammad Ali fighting George Foreman in 1975, the famous Rumble in the Jungle. And Mailer was at the fight. Now, this was an era with no satellite TV, and those guys flew out to Zaire to watch the fight. The fight was postponed because I think Foreman got an injury. So they all lived together out in Zaire for the interval between the initial fight date and the actual fight date. And this is Mailer's sort of ringside account of the story. I've been reading the book and it was coming up the training camp, and I thought, this is the story. I just thought there's a symmetry, for in my imagination anyway, crazy as it was sound, between Muhammad Ali going into this fight where he was the underdog and coming out on top, and the Armagh team of 02 going into an All-Ireland series where they had been labelled as a team that couldn't win, that couldn't close out in the tournament. And I thought, there's some sort of parallel here. No one expected Ali to win in Zaire. No one expects Armagh to do anything. So I really, I think, told them the story of the fight. I used quotations from the book to paint the picture. And I suppose my invitation was to see some echo in that story of the story that they had about themselves. There's some amazing passages in Mailer's book where there was an expectation some people had that Foreman would maybe lethally injure or even kill Ali in the ring. They felt it was such an unequal contest. And even some of the people around Ali, according to Mailer, were very fearful and doubtful. And Mailer was in the dressing room before the fight that fateful night, and Mailer talks about people saying prayers and a sense of gloominess until Ali got to his feet and starts bouncing around the dressing room, doing a shuffle and saying to people, "Do you want to dance? I'm going to dance. I'm going to dance. Do you want to dance?
This kid's got a left. This kid's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night." And as you lie on the floor, while the ref counts 10, you pray that you won't have to fight me again. "For I am the man this poem is about, the next champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64.
I suppose what I was hoping the Armagh players would see was that the importance of your own personal narrative and the way you talk to yourself, your self-talk. What do you say to yourself about yourself as a competitor, about what you're capable of doing, about your own resilience, about how you can in sport write your own history, even when people around you are saying you can't do it, you're not good enough. As was the story that had built up around Armagh over the previous couple of years. And also, it's not particularly original to hold up a figure like Muhammad Ali and say, this person's inspirational. There's nothing original in saying that. So what in a way an easy, accessible thing for me to talk to a group of players about. Everybody knows who he is. I maybe put in a little bit of, by doing a little bit of reading, put in maybe a little bit of colour or detail that some players wouldn't quite have known about him. So that story became a metaphor that year, I would say, for the team. And I revisited it several times over the course of their run to the All-Ireland final. One of the things I was very aware of was not telling the story ad nauseum to the point where people would get bored. But I would use occasional references to Ali through that summer. I remember on one occasion we gave the players a photograph of Ali with a quote. I think we posted it to them. So there's just occasional reminders of the night when I first told the story about that fight. And then Armagh got over Dublin in the semi-final that year in a really close game. Dublin had a chance to equalise with the last kick of the game. And Armagh had actually clawed their way to the final that year. They had to go to a replay against Sligo in the quarter-final. They had to go to a replay against Tyrone in the first round in Ulster, which they eventually won. So they'd really fought their way to the final. Very narrow victories. You know, real evidence of a resilience in the group. And I think with Joe Kernan's management, there was a sense that something different was happening. When they got past Dublin, there was a 3-week gap between the semi-final and the final. And I was trying to feel my way about what am I doing when I speak to this team, and how do I make it interesting, relevant, entertaining? How do I find a niche in that role that's helpful without becoming, you know, obtrusive or unwanted? So anyway, after the semi-final, I was thinking, God, wouldn't it be amazing if Muhammad Ali would send a message to this team? And I had this idea, maybe he would tape a message and send it to us. And looking back, it feels very naive as a thought, because I think his Parkinson's disease had already pretty good grip on him at that point. So the idea even of a video message probably was problematic. And this is me sitting in Belfast. I'd made no approach. And I was thinking about all of this, and my next door neighbour at the time was a woman called Patricia Moore, who was the producer of The Kelly Show, which was a very well-established talk show on UTV in Northern Ireland. As I learned, TV producers, very resourceful people. And I went round one evening and said, if I wanted to contact Muhammad Ali, would you know how I could go about doing it? And this is 2002, I think. We're definitely not on internet then. We're not accessed to Wi-Fi and all that stuff. So you're not Googling anything. You're relying on the sort of the old-fashioned way of kind of getting information. And Patricia said, yeah. I can get you a phone number. And she got me the phone number of his organization, GOAT, G-O-A-T, as I learned it was called, Greatest of All Time. She gave me the phone number, and out of the blue, that week, I phoned them up, and I got somebody really helpful on the phone, and I started telling them the story about this Gaelic football team in Ireland and how the Muhammad Ali story had become a story that we had used for, you know, for inspiration. And I think I did ask them, I did ask them for a video. That's right, I asked them, would he send a video message? And the first thing they said was no, his health wouldn't allow him to do that. I felt a bit foolish on the phone, but I said, look, I'm going to send you some information. So I put together a letter explaining everything again about how I'd used the story, the book, the fighting Zaire, Muhammad Ali's life. And I sent over some newspaper cuttings and I posted them in Armagh jersey. And I phoned again about a week later. So we're now about 10 days out from the Ireland final, and got the same woman, then put me through to a different person. And they said, oh, we got your stuff. And she started to laugh. And I thought, well, why wouldn't you laugh? Because I am a crazy guy and this is like nuts. I hadn't told Joe Kernan or the players what I was doing. I was just on a fishing trip, I suppose, and a little expectation anything was going to happen. So the first lady that answered that call put me on to a second lady, who was the lady, started laughing, said, we've got your letter. And she says, I'm putting you through now to a man whose first name was David. I remember that. And I thought, this is just the Dear John moment, you know, where they say, look, you know, enough, thanks very much, but leave us alone, crazy guy. So this guy comes on the phone and I said, hello, David, I haven't spoken to you before. I'm Hugh. He says, I know who you are. I'm in charge of this project. I said, what do you mean? He said, Muhammad has agreed to write to you. I said, what do you mean? He said, Muhammad's going to send all the players a letter. How many players are there? How many coaches? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I can't remember what I said. I thanked him, but I just couldn't believe it. And about 3 days later, a Federal Express box arrived, and inside the box were these letters in an embossed paper. Top of the paper says GOAT, Greatest of All Time, and weaving through the letters is a butterfly and a bee. And the letter is dated, says, a County Armagh Gaelic football team. And the date is 21st of September 2002 on the letter. And it says, in Croke Park, Dublin, Republic of Ireland.
You're listening to the Ali Ireland Final on Documentary on News Talk.
When I say three, they go into third. So don't bet against me. I'm a man of my word. If Cassius says a cow can lay an egg, don't ask how. Grease that skillet. He is the greatest.
You know, I was in a kind of a daze. And of course, I'm not kicking any footballs. I'm not going to make any tackles. Letters aren't going to win matches. And there's a, you know, this tremor in you that if you use this letter in some way, how do you do it without it being a distraction? How do you use it in a way that might in some way augment the mood of the team? And along with the letter, he sent a signed photograph of himself. So one for every player and each coach. So I brought the package down to the City West, and the night before the final, as had become custom after the kind of formal team talk from Joe Kernan and his assistant Paul Grimley, I would do this slot. And it was a weird rule. It was a bit of entertainment, have a bit of fun, but say some things that have meaning and depth, and maybe speak to the purpose of being together, and that might reassure and reaffirm their ability. Strange half-hour rule. And that night I remember asking him a question. I said, if a young Muhammad Ali could speak to you, what would he say to you? I knew I had the letters upstairs in the room, and the plan was to distribute them the next morning discreetly, just put them under players' doors early morning before they got out of bed and not refer to them. And then I showed them a short presentation, and it was some images, and some images of Ali as a young athlete, but they were combined with pictures of the players as young players. And we set it to a bit of music. And, you know, that was grand. I was working at a guy I brought in to help me called Des Jennings. And the next morning, he went around the doors and he slid the letters under the doors. And I remember at breakfast that morning, and as players arrived in the team room, there was a lot of, you know, eye contact, people looking for me, nodding, a few smiles. I never mentioned the letter. I didn't ask about it because I was really conscious that it shouldn't be a distraction. It shouldn't become the talking point of the day. I think there was a story that someone told me one player threw the letter in the bin because he thought it was a hoax. I think he got it back later. I don't know if that's true or not. And I don't think we talked about the letter for days, until days and days later after the game, and it was an epic game. You know, they were behind against Kerry, missed a penalty before half time. You come back to secure that, you know, historic victory. So my other memories that day were leaving the City West, the coming down the stairs and into the lobby, and the lobby packed full of supporters cheering and clapping, and you know, the sense of emotion even at that point was you know, the air was electric. And I remember thinking, God, I hope these guys are staying cool and, you know, and focused. And then this epic journey into Dublin, and just the bus going through this tunnel of supporters, Kerry flags and orange and white flags for Armagh, and people waving at the bus and cheering, and just this, partly for me, a sense of how have I ended up being able to experience this, and how overwhelming it was, and what an insight into a sport that I had no, you know, it was a far cry from the Oval, or standing in a mucky field in Ballyclare at a cross country race. And just that something special, it was part of something special, and I was very lucky. Got to the ground, and I went and sat in the stand and watched the game from the stand as a fan. And when the game was over, well, the whole of Croke Park was on the pitch, I think, that day. And I remember my first thought was, I ran down to the canal end to look for my family, who were sitting up in the upper tier. And, you know, my kids were very young, and my wife was there, my mum was there, my nephew was there, and just waving at them. And then eventually, I think I didn't get it back in the dressing room until it was sometime after the presentation. And I remember going in, and the players were standing in a big circle. I think the cup was in the centre of the circle. And somebody began singing, I think, the Boys from County Armagh. It was just an incredible few moments, just to be able to see all of that. You know, probably one of the happiest places I've ever been in my life, that 10 or 15 minutes. There was one player in that team that had asked me to help him personally that season, and he used to come around to the house where we're sitting here to meet me. And I didn't really have the language for it then, but I would say that what we did might fall under the bracket of mindfulness work or visualization work or relaxation or self-hypnosis. It was somewhere in that category of activity, as I was trying to find a way of helping him address some of the things that he felt were affecting his ability to play at his very best. And this guy had an amazing final. And I remember him coming and finding me in the dressing room and just giving me this huge hug. And for those few seconds, you're just it's very hard to describe the feeling you have. It was incredible. And then it was over. And I come from a background in sport where you know, and I learned this in Irish league football, you move on to the next game very quickly. There's 40 odd games in a season, and seasons come very fast. And soccer, being with Tommy Cassidy and then working for Roy Coyle, who succeeded him, you know, this pragmatic thing in soccer of you keep moving on, you keep facing forward, whether you lost the last game or won it, whether you won a trophy or lost it, you keep, it's all about what comes next. And I remember the day after the Ireland final, and the bus up to, back up to County Armagh, talking to the players about next year. And the bus stopped at the Carrigdale Hotel, and there's a huge crowd to greet the team. And it was, you know, it was almost like the day before, repeated with excitement and colour. And I said cheerio to the team and went home. And that was 0-2 finished with for me. And they asked me to go back the following year and repeat. One of the second year, you know, and again, it feels a bit embarrassing thinking about this now, but I thought, oh, a letter from Muhammad Ali, how do you follow that? And I had this idea because we'd, you know, Lance Armstrong was in his ascent. You know, 03 was maybe his second or third tour victory, something like that, but he was on the ascent, and an amazing story. We now understand it differently, of course, but from the vantage point you had in 03, this guy was just a colossal, heroic figure. And I thought, well, if I had Muhammad Ali in 02, wouldn't it be nice if Lance Armstrong would do something in 03? And if Muhammad Ali would do something, why wouldn't anybody else? This, again, I know it sounds kind of, it isn't naive. So I got a hold of his phone number through my next door neighbour, the TV producer, Patricia. And I started phoning, I think it was somewhere in Colorado. It might have been Boulder. I think that's where he was based out of for a while. And I phoned 3 or 4 times and I was getting nowhere. I was getting people answering the phone and I was definitely getting, you're a crazy guy and this is irrelevant. And I think the fourth time I called, because I had this, again, this naive idea, oh, if Muhammad Ali's writing to the team, Lance Armstrong would definitely do something. I got a guy called Chris Carmichael, who I later learned was Armstrong's coach, and he just completely, no, we don't do that sort of thing, and why would they? So I got in touch with the Ali people again, and they agreed to send a second letter in 03, but there was a delay in getting posted. So they agreed that they would have it delivered to the City Hotel in Dublin the weekend of the game. So that's cutting things fine. And I was tracking the letter by phoning up Federal Express. Again, no internet. I found out that I think the Fed Express arrived in Stansted from the States. And then it had to, I think, be transferred from somewhere like Stansted to somewhere like Gatwick or Heathrow and then go to Dublin. And they told me that it wouldn't arrive till the Monday. And I thought, well, you know, it's not really in my plans. I got the Fed Express depot number or head office in London or in Stansted, somewhere over in England. And I told them that I was a member of staff for the Irish president. And there was a package on board that we needed for a state occasion on the Sunday. And could they expedite its delivery rather than go through the normal channel? And they agreed. And it arrived. I don't want to say too much more than that. I may have assumed a false identity. But so the letter arrived. But, you know, we know how the real story, the story that mattered, how it ended. And you know, a manager that I had done a bit of work for and had a lot of respect for, and players that I had, you know, met, at underage level, were the players who defeated the team that I was then involved with. It's funny, the circles and symmetry that sometimes sport brings to your door. So, as sport often does, you get this huge reminder of how fallible you are and how easy it is to get knocked off your perch. Because in 2003, Armagh got beaten in the preliminary round in Ulster by Monaghan. You know, it was shocking. Ironically, years later, I went to work for Monaghan, and I worked with some of the players who Paul Finlay made his, I think it was his championship debut that day, and he scored, I don't know, 7-8 points. He played beautifully. And I got to work with Paul a few years later. You know, but you come out of Clonus then, and you've gone from hero to zero. And I thought, you know, what a challenge. And the backdoor system in Gaelic football had been introduced. I remember the Monday after the game, I phoned up most of the players, and I just talked to them about, I suppose it was where's your head at, and are you a fighter or a quitter? And you had a sense of the measure of the people involved, and I knew what they would say, and they went on to reach the final in 2003. It was again an incredible run, coming out of a place where maybe lesser people, more poorly managed, would have quit. So I was thinking, you know, at this point, how do I follow up on last year? And I hadn't sort of battered on about Ali ad nauseum, you know, to them. But I contacted the people in Mississippi again, and they sent a second letter. Ali sent a second letter in 03. Again, you know, beautifully presented, different form of words from the, you know, the previous year. And one of the lines in it, because I had talked to him about what had happened against Monaghan and the setbacks, and he says in this letter, you should be very proud of yourselves as you've already defied the critics and proven once again you're an outstanding team.
Yes, I'm the man this poem is about. I'll be champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. Here I predict Mr. Liston's dismemberment. I'll hit him so hard, he'll wonder where October and November went.
So we had the second letter, and we did the same thing, put it under the doors on the morning of the match. And in this sort of weird symmetry of my sporting life, we were playing a Tyrone team managed by Mickey Hart. And they beat us. And that was devastating. It felt devastating for me. I can only imagine what that was like for players. You could see the hurt at the time for the players and management. But I remember the morning after the final, getting up, and I wanted to write a note to the captain, to Kieran McGinney, because I had this, I wouldn't say I felt I knew him particularly well, but I recognised how significant he was as a leader and a figure in the team, and how much playing for his county meant to him. And I went to write him a personal note, because I was going to get in the car and go home. And I sat down to write the note, and I burst into tears. And I cried for about 5 minutes in my hotel room. Just cried and cried. Disappointment. Put a card under his door and went home. And that was almost the end of my journey in Armagh. I parted company with the squad that autumn.
When I say two, there's never a third. Betting against me is completely absurd. When Casher says a mouse can outrun a horse, don't ask how. Put your money where your mouse is. I am the greatest.
2 days after that final, I was at home, and, you know, anybody's been around in sport and lost something that mattered to them, there's a weird, almost, there's a physical feeling that comes with a loss. I describe it as feeling a bit inside out. And I'm not comparing it to, for one second, I'm not comparing it to people who suffer trauma and loss in life. It's sport, after all. But when you're really committed to something and it means a lot to you, it still can give you, it can affect you. So with this sort of, you know, this feeling of inside out, you haven't slept properly, you're very disappointed, you're wondering what was all the effort about, you're wondering a bit about what comes next, all of those things. Anyway, late on the Tuesday afternoon, the phone went in the house. I was home, I answered the phone, and it was an American voice. And this woman introduced herself as Muhammad Ali's wife. And she said, Muhammad wants to know who won the game. Yeah. That was the second time I cried. I guess it was the days before internet. They probably don't get the Irish Times in Berrien Springs, you know. I thought that was amazing. That was just incredible. So 2003, it's the same beautiful letterhead, the Ali, in embossed writing with the butterfly and the bee. And the date is September 25th, 2003. Dear Armagh player, it's my great honour to write to you again this year to wish you the best of luck in the All-Ireland Football Championship final. You should be very proud of yourselves as you have already defied the critics and proven once again that you're an outstanding team. I am sure that the match is extremely important to you since you are the returning champs. I'm greatly honoured if I've inspired you along this amazing journey. Best wishes for another successful final. Sincerely, Muhammad Ali. And again, it's a handwritten signature above the printed name Muhammad Ali.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, from Louisville, Kentucky, wearing black tie, Mr. Cassius Marcellus Clay.
By Cassius Clay. This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeedy of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a-running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. This kid's got a left. This kid's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night. And as you lie on the floor, while the ref counts 10, you pray that you won't have to fight me again. For I am the man this poem is about, the next champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64. When I say three, they go in the third. So don't bet against me, I'm a man of my word. If Cassius says a cow can lay an egg, don't ask how, grease that skillet. He is the greatest. Yes, I'm the man this poem is about. I'll be champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. Here I predict Mr. Liston's dismemberment. I'll hit him so hard, he'll wonder where October and November went. When I say two, there's never a third. Betting against me is completely absurd. When Cassius says a mouse can outrun a horse, don't ask how. Put your money where your mouse is. I am the greatest.
Another thing to say. This is one thing. This is one thing I love and I admire about the Irish people. I studied a little of the history since I've been here. I found out you've been underdogs for years, hundreds of years, people dominating you and ruling you, and you can identify with this freedom struggle, you understand? But I just have mine on the other side of the water. But we all are fighting for the same cause and idea, but we have different reasons and different approaches.
Muhammad Ali, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm gonna float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. George can't hit what his hands can't see. Now you see me, now you don't. He think he will, but I know he won't. They tell me George is good, but I'm twice as nice. And I'm gonna stick to his butt like white on rice.
That's right.
That was the greatest of all time. Of all time.
The Ali Ireland final was produced by Jonathan Farrelly and was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland as part of the Sound and Vision scheme.